Hello out there in the podcast universe. This is Tina, also known as Tiz, and I'm here with Lori, also known as Ain't I.
Hey, y'all.
And we're presenting to you our new podcast, The Cobblestone Exchange. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Cobblestone Exchange.
It is our hope to shed light on the relatability of each person's innate genius. Through understanding, we envision improving the human condition. Disclaimer, we are not professional doctors, licensed therapists, or psychologists of any sort.
We don't know nothing.
We're simply sharing our opinions based off of personal experiences.
We crazy, y'all.
In case of mental health emergency, please contact 911 or the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255.
Hey there, cobblers. Whose shoes are we walking in today? On this episode, we'll be discussing the many manifestations of depression. This show is dedicated not only to people living with depressive disorders, but also those that only imagine the disorder through a single viewpoint. You probably have some preconceived notions that are not entirely accurate, leading you to question your desire to become close to peers, strangers, or loved ones who may suffer from a depressive disorder, and we're here to help bridge that gap between people. So today, we're going to talk to Ain't I, also known as Lori, and if you don't remember, my name is Tina, aka Tiz, out in the streets. They might know me by Tiz. And so we're going to talk to Ain't I today about her mental health journey. And in doing so, we hope to shed light on some of the lesser known experiences of people living with the disorder and dispel some common myths, as always. So let's get into it. All right. So Lori, what is it? Hey, how you doing today?
What's going on, everybody? Glad to be here.
Yes.
Kind of nervous. I'm going to be very, very candid.
Yeah, we try to be as real with y'all as we can. So, Lori, so my first question for you is, what is the difference? What would you say the difference is between depression and bipolar?
That's a good question to start off. The difference between depression and bipolar is that depression usually fluctuates between good days and bad days. And then some depression is just passing or is a cause and effect situation where you may feel down. Something causes you to feel down.
Yeah.
But major depression or clinical depression is a prolonged, period of feeling a loss of not just a bad mood, but, loss of activities that you used to like. Yeah. And it interrupts your daily life. Now, the difference between that and bipolar sense of being happier than you have ever felt, or happier than other people, than other people's baseline is. You're feeling like you are able to do things that you weren't able to do. It's like you go from being a superhero, and then the next day you're like the nerd getting bullied and teased, every day, getting thrown into the trash can and feeling like you deserve it. to the next moment feeling like you can, knock everything off of your to-do list and don't even need to sleep. More technically, bipolar is a severe mood disorder, and the major depression and the mania go back and forth. So mania is not just being happy, it's like racing thoughts. Like, I remember calling somebody on the phone and talking to him for 30 minutes about all these different things I was thinking and feeling, and not even thinking to ask him how he was doing, how his family was doing. And I wasn't trying to be inconsiderate. My mind was moving so fast that it wasn't until an hour after we spoke that I reviewed the conversation in our head and realized that he had nothing to say because I didn't allow him to speak.
Yeah. Well, that's good that you realized that. Some people don't even realize that. And you thinking can I say something eventually? So I feel like people might think that was me.
And I mean, it's interesting you point that out, because I think that that may be the one of the calling cards of having this condition from, you know, having a major, you know, having a clinical depression episode, is that when you feel like you may have made a mistake, you feel like the worst piece of nothing that there is. So right after you have that emotional high of being really, really excited, you go right back into analyzing and questioning, okay, now what the heck? Was that realistic? Was I considerate? Was I being thoughtful? You know, and then when you ask yourself those questions and the answers are no, then it's like, oh my gosh, what have I done?
Yeah.
So it's constantly a reviewing of what kind of wreckage you may have caused while you weren't realizing it. It becomes a pattern, so you know to look back after a while.
Yeah. That sounds very exhausting.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a little bit more about clinical depression and what makes, you know, them a little bit different. Clinical depression is a situation where your brain functions change and you have altered activity of certain circuits in the brain, and it's not something that, like I said, cause and effect. It's not something, of course, you know, when you suffer a tragedy, it is a state of depression that you're in. However, the general unhappiness and despondency sometimes can come at the drop of a hat. Sometimes can happen right around some of the best points in your life, and then you feel like, why? People ask you why, and you ask yourself, I have no right to feel this way. I'm blessed, you know. So you start counting your blessings, and then that kind of makes you feel even more worthless. So it's certainly draining, most certainly.
No, I feel you. Like I feel like I go through some of these moments, and so I think it's great that you did break down the differences, because I feel like a lot of people go through like some of these emotions but don't really understand what they mean necessarily, or like why they go through what they go through. So like that was a very good breakdown. Like, so basically what you said is with depression, that's something that's circumstantial, like something might have happened at that time that caused you to be temporarily depressed or sad, or it might is something that just is short term, just lasts for a day or so, or a few days or so. And with clinical depression, that's a more elongated experience, something that doesn't go away as quick. You're persistently in a down mood. And then bipolar sounds like it's just a big range going from one extreme to another. So,
exactly. And the thing is with the bipolar is that, like I said, you one side doesn't really know what the other side is doing as it's happening. But even when you're feeling normal, you even question, like I said, the confidence that you once had.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, I may have had a good idea and even told the people about it. I might have pitched a nice idea, but then I go back and I'm like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Who would even be that bold? So it kind of at a lot of times it kind of held me back and made me self-sabotage, because I thought, well, who am I to actually execute this type of plan?
Yeah.
Who am I to come up with something like this? I must be crazy, you know? And then also just to like make it a little more understandable, when people talk about bipolar, I don't remember hearing it much when I was growing up. I remember hearing more manic depressive. That's like the old term. But to me, it's a little more descriptive, because it tells you the manic and the depressive, where it seems like bipolar is kind of associated with more, I don't know. We're going to talk about the myths, because I can't really say what people from the outside see on the inside.
Yeah. So we'll get into that. We can get into that now, actually. So as many of you may know from our last episode, right now we're doing a series called the Myth Expo. The Myth Expo. Where we expose myths. this is where we're dispelling myths with our experiences. We're discussing our personal experiences. We're not licensed doctors, so make sure you go see a licensed doctor to get any kind of diagnosis. But we're here to just like maybe clarify some gray areas people may have just by hearing our experiences. So the first myth I want to discuss with Lori is, so we kind of went into that a little bit, but like everybody experiences depression the same way. Mm-hmm. So that, would you say that's a myth?
Absolutely. I think that that's a very common myth. If somebody tells another person that they're depressed, or if I tell somebody that I'm depressed, their reference point is usually themselves or somebody that they saw. So if you're not displaying those same symptoms, a lot of times they don't acknowledge it. And in all actuality, depression does range in seriousness from, as we said, the temporary episodes to severe, persistent depression. And we have to reiterate, it's not the same as, you know, something that's caused, you know, by a tragedy or even a medical condition. Those are different, slightly different subcategories. But even if somebody isn't displaying the most extreme manifestations of their depression, mm-hmm. you really have to assume that this person is in some deep, deep turmoil, and that it's not the type that will just be a passing phase. So, you know, if you have a friend or a loved one, definitely be observant and attentive when someone does, you know, express that, or is even just showing the behaviors of that.
Yeah. So what would you say, like when someone's being observant, what would you say they should look for?
That's actually a very, very good question. Things like a prolonged, like extended kind of rages that are especially turned in on themselves, or excuse me, sometimes I can go off on something will hit me personally that has completely nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's a sign of some inner turmoil that I'm feeling. I might be dwelling on a failure of mine. You know, I might feel, you know, just unresponsive. Like if I'm, like you said, if you don't respond to your normal activities how you used to, that is a huge sign that something could be wrong. If you play basketball every day and then all of a sudden you don't want to play, or video games, or if someone just says out loud, you know, I don't really enjoy life anymore. You know, I mean, sometimes it's really, really obvious and you think it's cynical. The most cries for help, or most just you plain truths, are wrapped in humor. So yeah. When you have somebody that's really overly sarcastic and cynical about life, a lot of times that's a huge sign.
Yeah. I know, yeah, they say a lot of comedians suffer from depression. Like my man, Robin Williams.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. So.
One of our biggest role models.
Yep.
Yeah, what killed me about that is, I think it was David Letterman. I think it was David Letterman. Because it could have been Jay Leno. But I remember, you know, when his show came on and he did his tribute, he was just like, I'm just so sorry that I had no idea that you was in pain like that. Like, I just didn't know, and I'm so sorry.
Yeah, really gotta check in on people, man. Like you said, like if somebody's just acting different than their normal routine, like we gotta check in on each other.
Exactly. And then also I want to add about that, I mean, as far as my personal experience, as far as how will somebody be able to tell if Lori Liberty I'm sorry, I had to laugh at my own stage name.
Yeah, so we got many nicknames, y'all.
If Liberty was depressed, how would my people know?
Right.
I mean, I sleep a lot, but then again, I always like to sleep a lot. My theory on myself personally is that I was, since I was able to be aware of myself, I've been like a melancholic type. Like I'm very melancholy. My baseline is a bit sad, a bit thoughtful about not just what could happen, but what does happen.
So are you saying like you're more like a cynic?
I've always been a cynic. I've always been very passionate about injustice. Like, I remember processing, watching the news as a young child and getting really angry and actually like coming up with like different instruments. Like, I don't know when I was exposed to like medieval, like Inquisition days types of forms of punishment when they was chopping off people's heads with the guillotines and, you know, boiling people in hot water and stuff and pulling people apart.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was fascinated with that as a child. And when I would hear of the crimes, I would say what should happen to that person. Oh, we should put the spike chains on his wrists for murdering that person.
Yeah.
I used to take it really, really personally. And I thought that was just the kind of kid person I was. Nobody ever said, you know, that's a little extreme.
You know. So this wasn't, according to the show, you were saying in like real life, that's how people should be punished. Are you talking about the show?
No, as a child, this is what I was, that's how I respond when I was watching the news.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's to people doing wrong on the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, maybe you were just like all about justice.
That's a nice way of saying it. I've always been an opponent of of injustice.
Yeah, it's because I feel like we're all superheroes in our own right.
Yes. Yeah, like, you know, malicious ass, you know, exacting justice, you know. So even as a child, I'm like, you know, I'm thinking of forms of suffering and shit like that. Yeah. You know, slow and long, you know. Do I want to nick a person a million times? You know, like those. But, so because when you're 6 and 7 and that's what you're thinking about, I can't recall if something sparked me to begin thinking that way or if that's always been how I was.
Yeah.
But of course, one of the symptoms of, you know, major depression is associating with death, you know, constantly talking about it, just kind of like, not even constantly talking about it.
But just something that you're always thinking about, like, in the back of your head, ruminating about.
Yeah, exactly. And I think about it a lot.
That's interesting. Yeah. You might have to go back to that.
Okay.
So that kind of leads into our second myth. Well, not the death part, but right before that. You were saying, like, different reasons you can be depressed. Now, like, I feel like this is a big myth that I get angry about myself, but people always say, like, something had to have happened to cause you to be depressed. Like, what happened? Like, so would you say that happens to you a lot?
Yes, I would say that happens to me a lot. And that happens from family, because when you grow up with people, it's hard to distinguish a shared experience from a single perspective.
Mm-hmm.
When you imagine your family unit, y'all remember a time, a place in time that happened. We don't realize until we become wise adults that each person present had a different angle and a different feeling and a different outcome, paid attention to different things in that situation.
Different perspectives.
Exactly. We didn't understand perspective. We thought that there was one way it happened, the way that I saw it, because I see and I seen.
Yeah.
And because of that, people that grew up around you and raised you even, they're trying to pinpoint what went wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like that when it's like, okay, well, you like women, is this a phase? What happened? So when it comes to you being depressed, I remember I was like going through like one of my probably like my second episode of being depressed, but at this point I like knew I am depressed right now, because it was things that I could do normally were so difficult to get done. Like, paperwork was overwhelming. Things that took multiple steps, like when you are, you know, starting at the bottom and you're going through like your job search and you're going through Monster, and first step you gotta prepare your resume, then you gotta upload your resume, then yeah, you gotta, you know, put out the applications, and you gotta wait for responses, you gotta check the email, you gotta follow up with certain ones, you gotta respond to the email.
Yeah.
Tasks become multitasks, and then they become little subtasks of the same shit. And at a certain point, you feel like you're gonna explode, right? When you're in it. So you'd be like, damn, I can't do this right now. And somebody will look at you and be like, but why? It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. Or you did it yesterday, which is perfectly true.
Yeah.
So it is a wonder what has happened to you that you were unable to perform.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I remember my father around that time when I was like, I don't know, I'm just feeling depressed. You know, they kept asking me. Every single person was like, what's wrong? What's wrong? Why we can't fix your life?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you can't. Why is your life in a situation? Why is there situations?
I know that.
And I was like, I just feel depressed. Like, I just feel slow. I feel weak. I don't know.
It's hard to explain. Sometimes you don't have an explanation yourself.
Yeah, but you know what the response I got was?
Is that?
Oh, you're too young to be depressed.
I got that too in church. Yes.
And it's a heartbreaking statement to receive, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like, well, yeah, I would like to believe that. Yeah. Which means that this is just some sort of temporary insanity I'm in.
Yeah.
But no. And it's very sad, you know, that it's like such a generation gap, that just a gap period in just feelings, you know?
Yeah. It's
and
like,
you can't see the pain of a young person, of a child.
Because people didn't really, that the older generation, and sorry, no offense, I love my elders, but the older generation really didn't have all the resources and the knowledge we have now. And then back then, especially, I feel like in the Black community, that stigma with the Black community, I feel like. So they just push all kind of disorders. Like, we already been through enough. We don't need to add disorders on us on top of that. Or we don't need to make ourselves look even more impoverished or any more remedial. Like, so, but it's not really saying that. It's just, you just got to know your body, just like, about dealing with diabetes or any other sickness.
Exactly. Because the thing about it is, I can really understand. Now, I can't understand it because I'm not from that generation, you know? But mm-hmm. I know that they were built differently. They was fortified tough.
Yes.
You know?
Right. They had to push through.
You know, yeah, you had to push through. And then we wouldn't be here if they didn't.
They had to do it to live, so.
Uh-huh. So you really did have to stuff your feelings and move forward, you know, and they expect the same of us. But the thing is there's so many other variables going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got the change in times, you got the, you know, influx in everything. So now we're living in a totally different world to where you can't just slide in that same mentality.
Yeah,
you know,
we're constantly viewing everybody's personal diary on a daily basis on social media.
Yeah.
So it's hard to manage what you're going through with all these, would you say that? Like, with all the stimuli that's out there.
Yeah, all the stimuli. Yeah, I would say it's an anxiety-induced society that we live in, you know? And I even empathize with older people who... And I always wondered how the old heads that are, like, really, you know, on the news, making it to 90 and 100 years old, and they seem to be pretty at peace with things. I don't know if I'm built for that. If I live 100 years and I watch all this shit happen, I think I'm gonna just have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot to take in. I'm already overwhelmed, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
Once we reach singularity, my mind is just going to explode.
Silly.
Yeah, but I digress. I think that was one of the passions driving us beginning this show, was breaking the stigmas between people, not just between the mental health community and people that consider themselves fully functional, normal people, but also why the stigmas come from different angles, from different communities that we're all involved in, and it makes the experience so much more complicated. Because how a white person will respond will be different from how a Puerto Rican person responds, and it's different from how a Black older person responds and a Black younger person responds, and the like, with everything, you know?
And culture too. Like, it's a difference in how, like, I grew up in church, and the church people respond differently to mental health than people that don't go to church.
Exactly. And that's a very important myth that I think that we're going to get to later on, because that deserves its own, you know. But we just want to let y'all know, like, you know, whether y'all are older or younger, or, you know, African American or Caucasian, or, you know, whatever you represent, we doing this for you, not for you, like, I'm not doing nothing for you, but I'm doing this for all of us to kind of just get some kind of little bit of more understanding of each other and see, like, that we got to break certain cycles, you know, we got to take the good traditions and leave out the bad ones, you know, or the unhealthy ones, rather.
Exactly.
The unproductive ones, the painful ones.
And then we did kind of talk about this next myth. We actually did go into it a lot about the myth that people think you can just toughen up and snap out of depression.
Oh, I like that. Because, yeah, I was still in my bag from the last one. So I like how this swings right in. Yeah, you just got to toughen up and snap out of it. I really wanted to. You know what I mean? You're 20 or whatever the case may be. And, you know, you're not feeling your full energy.
Yeah, because they say it's, like, debilitating, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, it's completely debilitating to the point that once your mind is stressed and your body is stressed, stress is a thing. You know what I mean? Just like air is a thing. You can't see it, but you know it's there when the wind blows. Yeah. That's how stress is.
Yeah.
Stress will live in you, and it'll remind you that that it has to be addressed. You know?
Oh, yeah. I understand that. It will come back and make sure you know. I know that now.
You know, your stomach will turn, your head will throb, your joints will ache, you know.
Yeah, that's why I got migraines now. I gotta listen to your body.
Yeah, and all of these are things that you don't just treat the symptom. You figure out what is really wrong with me. Like,
and then it's like you said, it's not always that something is wrong or something happened, but like with depression, it's also hormonal imbalances involved as well. So like people need to understand that as well.
When it's like a mood disorder, and that was another thing, like I always thought I was moody, but I never thought that that was anything different than what anyone else would feel, you know?
Yeah.
So
if that's all you ever felt, that's, of course you would think that way.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa.
Mm-hmm. But what I really want to say about the older generations and the younger ones, I guess, in America, whether in the church or any kind of different religion, because I think most central religions, well, I don't even want to talk about that part yet. But, you know, just between the older and the younger folks, I really do understand where they're coming from. Like, you know, my sister got this thing where it's like, you just got to push through sometimes. You know, you're not always going to feel like it. But here's the thing that we all got to acknowledge, and this will be a whole nother topic for another episode. 99%, mostly, not even 99%. Everybody still living on this earth has experienced a form of trauma.
Yeah.
You know, and acknowledgement of trauma is dealt with differently in different cultures, in different families.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that that is the cycle that we're trying to identify and figure out how to get out of. Because the older generation, it was secrecy. So, of course, you're going to handle your mental anguish personally.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, not express it.
Exactly. You know, there was so much that was not expressed then. So now that we have the sexual revolution and the gay revolution and civil rights, it's really time that we acknowledge that we have to step out of secrecy. And I love how Ayanna Van Zandt, you know, on her show Fix My Life, like, really emphasizes that that's the theme. Like, all of these are kind of like, you know, generational curses that we have to find our way out of, or, you know, set the example for the kids to know how to get out of it, you know?
Yeah, so kind of like it's a set of beliefs being passed down without facts.
Exactly. So if I'm carrying my grandmother's blood, and my grandmother pushed through and established herself and functioned to provide for herself and, you know, everybody else that she created, you put them same expectations on yourself.
Yeah.
You're like, why can't I be the person? Why can't I be the woman that my grandmother was? You know? That's how she raised me to be. And then that's where it all comes. And then you get other influences. And then that's where the debilitation really, really hits you.
Yeah. And then all along, you never even really realized what that person was going through.
Because their generation's in secrecy. Nobody knew, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The trials and tribulations she had to do to stay afloat.
Exactly.
For all we know, it's magic. And now we have no tools on how to cope.
Yeah.
You know, we're relearning them instead of having them passed down. So we're exerting so much energy just to be at the same place.
That was deep, y'all.
Thank you, y'all. I'm like, I'm sure everybody else nodded their head. I'm going to just say thank you to everybody. My bad. That's that grandiosity talking. That wasn't me.
Let's move on to the next myth. So the next myth is there's only one type of bipolar disorder. And that's what I thought too. It's just,
yeah, that's the beauty of having a podcast prompt you to do way more research.
Right?
When you thought you had a topic covered.
Yes. Like, wait a minute. Learning more and more about myself.
Yes. Yeah. So as we learned, you know, according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, there are four types of bipolar disorder, and they're all distinguished by different experiences and intensities of the mood disturbances that I was describing earlier. So type one, they call a manic episode. Bipolar two is described as a hypomanic and depressive episodes. So the hypo is like the less extreme of a fully manic. So you're a little more, you know, you're happier than you should be,
yeah,
but you're not
full
bugging
blown
out. Yeah. as you were saying.
Yeah.
The cyclothematic or thymic disorder, that's the hypomania and the depressive symptoms cycling at a very rapid pace. It can be like 2 week spans or shorter where you're feeling one, you know, feeling,
it goes back and forth. Like,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that's really taxing.
I can imagine. I feel tired just hearing about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there is a type four where it's a bipolar disorder not otherwise specified. So it's like a bipolar like mood disturbance that does not fit the pattern of other diagnoses. And you know, that's another one to like cover bases. And
so it's like a mystery one.
It's a mystery one, you know, you kind of
it's you like the little mystery
it's
one.
Like that
the
Uno card, it's the wild card, yeah. You know?
Or the white star bus.
Oh yes.
Wait, did they have a white one? They always, the mystery drawn is always white.
Yeah, I think you're right. So So talking about that, you know, it's like the more you know. Now, a conversation for another day is, you know, how helpful these sub-diagnoses are for you. But it is very helpful to put a name to it, because you can understand your behavior and understand that it is a systematic thing.
Yeah, and that's the debate a lot of people come across. Somebody actually debated me online about this.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah. Question, you know, is the to be or not to be of it. So go ahead.
Yeah, like about putting the name on it, because and that's also part of the whole thing with stigmas. But like, somebody was debating me online about acknowledging what we have and saying that, basically, like I mentioned earlier, that it's just admitting that I'm inferior. So like, I don't know. I guess I'm wondering, like, how do you feel about putting names on these different diagnoses, and like putting, like, would you say is putting people in boxes or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very complex question, because it really involves perception again. You know, there's not going to be one right or wrong way for everyone.
Well, yeah, it's always going to put people in a box. That's probably a bad way to ask, because anytime you name somebody, give something a name, it puts them in a box. Because they even say when you name your child, that name develops their personality.
Exactly. That's the beginning of their ego.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I guess a better way of wording that is, do you feel that it's helpful to put a name to it, to what's going on? Or do you feel like it's helpful or counterproductive?
Excuse me. Because my mind works so binarily, my first instinct is to answer the question playing the devil's advocate and saying that it's not helpful. Because obviously I got a podcast about breaking stigmas and I'm talking about it. So I'm going to say it's not helpful for the sake of argument, for the sake of checking my own self. I don't think it's helpful because, let's look at it like this. Back in the day, I remember Ellen has this stand-up where she was talking about all of the different antidepressant commercials and how after watching them over and over again, you start to question yourself and be like, am I sad? Do you feel lonely? And she was like, well, back in the day, there was just crazy. You know, you didn't have all of these different words for it. And that's a sad, true thing. And it's like, okay, well, how helpful is it? Education is always better. Your mind is always better off when it knows more about what's going on.
Yeah.
But when you are a person in America that might be deficient of a proper identity, you know, if you're a man with no land, like us African Americans are, or however you want to call whatever it is that we all are, as you know, as this country is, you know, doing what it's doing.
Yeah.
Damn, I forgot my phone.
Sorry. You gonna build it on us?
Build it on us. You know what I'm tired of?
You done brought us to the top of the mountain and left.
Wait a minute, y'all. It's the kind of stuff that happens with these thoughts, you know?
Yes, I can't talk with my short-term memory.
Wait a minute, y'all. Wait a minute now.
And I got us all off topic, but that's what happens when you have somebody with ADD interview someone. But I did really want to address that, though, because that I feel like, I don't know, that was really weighing on someone's mind that was debating it with me. And I feel like a lot of people, that is...
identity.
Identity.
I remember now.
Yeah.
So I think that if you have people that are not fully self-aware and that are damaged, like we all are, then no, a title does nothing but give you something to cling on to. Then you're gonna embrace it way too much. Like when people know that they're a Capricorn, for instance. Yeah, it's good to know, because then you can research and find little tidbits about your life that are patterns that you realize, wow, I'm not as unique as I thought. There's actually a rhyme and reason to personalities and behaviors. But at the same time, if you are over-identified with being a Capricorn, you might think that something like cursing people out because you're hot-tempered is just the way it is. Well, that's what I'm going to do because I'm a Capricorn. So it's not a question of is it helpful to name it. It's once you have a name, how do you react? You know? And most, we're not given the tools. We're not fully functional beings to be able to take a name and not either internalize it some kind of way unhealthily, or, you know, overly identify with it to where it's like you're embracing stuff that might not even apply to you, or, yeah.
So I like what you said when you said, if once you have the name, how are you reacting to it? I think it's good to know to name what your diagnosis is, because I feel like a lot of people, like, it gives them a sense of relief to know what to work on. It's just like if you're sick and go to a doctor and you keep getting referred to specialists and nobody can tell you what's wrong with you, why you keep having this pain.
Right.
And, like, can you imagine how much stress that is, that you're going through this pain that can't be diagnosed, medicine people give you isn't working, like stuff people say pray over it and it's not working, you're still in pain every day and nobody can diagnose you with something. Mm-hmm. So that's how a lot of people dealing with mental health issues, I feel like, goes through.
Exactly.
And everybody's just saying like, you're just fine, you're just like overreacting or something like that. But
right.
To finally find out that what this is, like, so you can treat it. And that's where, to go back to your point where you said, how are you reacting to it? Now, I feel like that's where what draws the line between it being good and bad to know your diagnosis. To just know a diagnosis and not do nothing about it is just like having a sickness and not taking your medicine for it, or like not even on medicine, like just having a sickness and
just not changing your lifestyle anymore.
Yeah. Like having a heart condition and you're still eating cheeseburgers, you're not going to your doctor's appointment, mm-hmm. you don't care about it, you just playing the victim, and when it's good, like just good for you or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, but it's another thing to know your diagnosis, to put a name on something so that you can do something about it, like so you can research like better ways to cope and how
exactly.
to go about it.
Exactly. So I think that it's helped people individually, but as a whole, as a society, it may have had some unintended consequences.
Yeah. How it is with everything, man.
Exactly.
It's life.
Such is life, right?
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a short break right now.
All right.
I know we gave y'all a lot to go off of.
I'm stimulated. I feel real manicky now, y'all. Let's get it. Let's get it.
Yes, we'll be right back after these messages.
All right.
Fact check. Bipolar disorder affects approximately 5.7 million adult Americans, or about 2.6% of the U.S. population age 18 and older every year. This is according to the National Institute of Mental Health. They also mentioned, according to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, approximately 16.1 million adults in the United States experienced at least one major depressive episode in 2015.
And we're back.
Jamming on the one.
Yes. So for those just tuning in, we're discussing bipolar. Bipolar as opposed to depression, clinical depression. And we're discussing Lori's experiences as we do our myth expo. Where we expose myths. So right now we're on the myth that people with bipolar disorder are just moody.
So okay. I'll be happy to talk about that. I was talking about moods and how serious my moods are. Now, when people say you're in a bad mood, you usually can lighten up after a while. It's very, very different from that everyday fluctuation that we all experience. My moods are extreme. They can last for several days or weeks or months to the point of everything that I used to like is now foreign to me. Like, I can remember a really bad episode that I was going through. And my best friend at the time, who was like my everything, it's probably one of the closest friends I ever had. And I was low. And she was like, you know, L, like, you know, what she used to call me. I don't remember. But, you know, it's like, you know what to do. You know, yeah. Meditate, you know, shake this shit off of you. You know, you better than that. You're stronger than that.
Yeah.
Do what you need to do. You know what I mean? Rub your crystals, cleanse them hoes, you know. you know, align your chakras, you know. Let's just go back to the basics, you know.
Yeah.
Get that lower level, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so you do all of that. You go back, you read your books and everything. And it's like, it's not helping. You know, it's like, all right, well, go to therapy. That's... And that sometimes exacerbates people's anger.
Yeah.
You know, and I can see why sometimes therapists have that stigma. Some people have gone once, and usually people that don't go to therapy are people that have been once. yeah. You know.
But no, I've been through that. I've had a therapist that just made me angry.
Yeah.
I went for years before I finally decided to quit, but that's a whole nother episode.
Yeah, it's all good. But what I vividly recall is the more positive she would try to be, the more uplifting that she was trying to be, the more information she was trying to feed me to help uplift me, mm-hmm. the angrier I got, the more resentful towards her and her happiness and her positive attitude that I got, because I couldn't feel positive. Yeah. It was impossible for me to feel optimistic about anything. I wanted every damn thing to not exist anymore. You know what I mean? That's how extreme it is. You say stuff out your mouth that sends chills down people's spine. That's how your mood is. You know?
Scared me on occasion.
No,
before I got used to
something so cold. Yeah. And it'll yeah. It'll lift a motherfucker off their feet. Excuse me.
Yes, I'll mess with you.
Yeah.
I know not to mess with you in food.
Oh, right, exactly. You know, I got these primal instincts, and you know, they become rules of life where just certain violations can't be tolerated. It's a whole thing. And then, you know, like the rage and the anger when that gets out of control, but you know, when it gets
like when you choke people.
When the situations escalate all of a sudden, well, you know, so you now you're too much. That's usually how your days go. Now you're too much, okay? What started as you normally just putting this person in their place, doing the regular regulating, now I'm choking you. Now I broke your glasses. Whoa. How did we get here? You know?
Yeah, sorry. We flashing back to elementary school. My bad.
Now I see your shattered glass on the ground and five people pulling me off of you. What was I supposed to do?
Yes.
That's how it feels.
One day we'll have some stories about this. Y'all can witness on TV or YouTube or IGTV. We'll have a prelog of our life of how we came to be this way.
Oh, man. Yes. Prologue, like the Canterbury Tales. Yes. Like a long
thank
behind
you. I had a feeling
story.
I said that word wrong.
I think I said it wrong, and I'm an English major. Prelude,
I don't know. Prologue,
they're not the same thing. Somebody's wrong.
Listeners, tune in and let us know.
Somebody's not
the right word. Listeners, y'all can tune in by downloading the app. Leave us a message. Let us know who got the right word.
What is a mental health condition when you say words that you don't know the meaning of? They just come out and you feel like that's the context it ought to be said in.
Yes, I thank God for favor because I always tend to get it right. Surprise myself. I'm like, when did I learn that?
Usually when I try hard is when I die hard. So I'm right when it usually comes right out my mouth, but I'm usually wrong when I'm like, oh, actually, it's the other way. Nah.
Yes. So our next myth here, you already kind of covered it, where it's a myth apparently that people with bipolar are manic all the time. So we did discuss that, but I did want to bring up the fact that they say, like, and so you discussed that and saying, like, it can go from one extreme to another in your moods. And it says also, in fact, because depressive episodes are more frequent, according to this article I read, and it's common for bipolar disorder to be misdiagnosed as depression because of that. Okay. So, like, I wonder what your thoughts are as far as being misdiagnosed.
Okay. Yeah, I can tell you my thoughts and experiences about my misdiagnosis, and I also want to talk about the first part of your question. Excuse me, which is whether bipolar people are manic all the time. I can actually see why that would be a common misconception. The stereotype that we see in media and like the common word that we've used to cover all behaviors, I hear bipolar being used real casually, just thrown around, just real undoctorly, you know?
Yeah.
And usually it's described, usually what you think in your head is usually a woman, usually enraged, easily agitated, and very, very excessive in like the amount of like what the infraction was, and then like her idea of like the right punishment, the right retribution. It's usually an uneven distribution. Like, you know, like I step on your shoe, you know, you black my eye. Which, you know, depending on the price of the shoes, I guess. and then it all becomes cultural. You know, so there's rules of engagement, and those people just seem to go way beyond what the natural, you know, punishment would be. That's the stereotype. So I guess when people say manic, they might think that you are just on 10, versus when you're depressed, you're like so dejected that you don't even have the energy to fight somebody. It's more so usually turn inward, like your inflictions are usually stuff that's put on yourself. That's when the suicidal thoughts come in and things like that. Usually when you're in a mania state, you're more so thinking outwardly. It's like, I can do this, I can change this, I can improve this, you know, I can achieve this.
And that goes into the other myth, like what mania is really like. A lot of people think it's enjoyable, productive, or fun. Would you agree with that, or is it?
No, it's not fun. It's life is fun when your emotions are doing what your mind wants to do. Okay, that's always fun. That's the thing of it. If there's a well of energy and there's something for me to use it on, yeah, that's fun. Mm-hmm. But when I'm up at 3 a.m. wiping down windows, not sleeping when I gotta wake up in 3 hours.
Yeah.
And knowing that I need to do all of this, but yet unable to stop myself.
Yeah.
No, that's not fun, because I know that I'm inflicting damage and I can't really stop it.
Yeah.
It's hard to control impulses and know that you're losing control, you know? It's very not fun, and it's not fun getting knocked back on your block once you think you have the solution for world peace. Yeah. And then somebody tells you it's a ridiculous concept.
Yeah,
that ain't fun. To realize that you're not living in reality is not fun. To realize that your reality of what you think is possible is not aligned with what normal quote-unquote people think is even possible is very disheartening. It's discouraging. Because a lot of times you do have high hopes and good intentions. It's not just you being mad. You sometimes being mad because other people just not getting it how you get it, you know, or feeling how deeply as you feel.
Yeah.
So no, it's not fun. It's not fun to be sadder or happier than everybody else. It is fun being happier, but then but then you'd be like,
that's what I would think.
If happiness was the only symptom of it, yeah, it would be one thing, you know, but then there's also other things where you know something so much, you're so sure of something, you've done such research and got so much detail that you know it's true. So an idea, a seed can become a whole concept, which can become a whole, you know, you get yourself in a lot of trouble, you know? Like, I have accused people I've dated of being CIA agents. And the thing of it is like, to this day, I still do think they were. At least one of them. I think one was and one wasn't. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. But that's because of the person that I think I am, which could have been formulated when I was in one of these maniac stages.
Yeah.
But I think that I am high profile enough to warrant surveillance.
Yeah.
Surveillance. That's neither here nor there. I can't say all those things, but y'all know.
Y'all know. I don't got nothing to do with what I'm
saying. You
done.
Hear me, right?
Lord have mercy. Things come out when you start to interview your friends. Y'all need to interview your friends more. Gotta interview more people. Shoot.
Yeah, man. I've been infiltrated a total of 3 times, but only 2 was real. And they were successful like a mug, too. And that'd be the thing. So once you feel like you're compromised, I mean, you know, paranoia can just is a rolling ball. So you got isolation and paranoia, and that's basically like a mixture for psychosis. So yeah, it goes there. It goes there.
Yeah, and I know y'all probably a little confused, but Lori got an interesting background that let's get dive into her background, because so you know things can get put together for you. But yes, she's had some experiences, as we all have. But we're gonna go into Lori's experiences after this little break. We'll be back. All right, actually, we're gonna talk about this later on the next episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'll see y'all in a little bit. We won't keep you waiting long.
Yes. Look out for us.
Yeah. Seriously.
All right.
Hit us up, y'all.